Let the trip!
You are listening to What the Truck!
Are you ready to truck? It is time for your Nooner with Dooner. I'm Tim Dooner, your host. Welcome to Friday, everybody. Spring break over here in Chattanooga. By the way, welcome live audience, welcome on-demand audience, and of course, starting this week, welcome our SiriusXM Road Dog audience driving at 5 p.m. or even 11 p.m. at night, where you may be hearing this one. And if you're listening to it on demand, tell a friend. Tell them to become a What the Truck fan. It is spring break over here in Chattanooga. Have the kids at home, so been working and also trying to play with them on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Yesterday, I took them to the Telus Museum. It's over in Cartersville, Georgia. Really cool museum. And look, they had Elon Musk competition from 121 years ago. This vehicle is called the 1903 Waverly Electric Road Wagon Model 21. Here's some specs on this thing. So this is an electric car. The engine type on this is electric. Back in the day, again, 121 years ago, they were getting 40-mile range on this. It would go up to 15 miles an hour. The motors were a 3-horsepower DC, and it was made by International Motor Company in Indianapolis, Indiana. And what I found really interesting on that card, I'm not sure if it's close enough for you to read it, the card that's in front of the car, but he said the reason that they were making an electric car was they wanted to market this to women. They figured the gas cars and all the oil and everything would appeal more to men, where they were marketing this as the cleaner gas car for, I mean, the cleaner electric car for the lady in your life. Obviously, that didn't go very far. I'm not sure how much one of those is worth now, but back in the day, there you go, Mr. Waverly. Hey, a lot of news to kick us off before we jump to some guests today. It was a wild week in freight. The first one we're going to start with is someone who had an axe to grind with Swift. They started setting all these different Swift trailers on fire. Brindley Hyman, he reports a Michigan truck driver accused of being a serial arsonist responsible for setting blazes across the country has been found guilty in California for setting that Swift transportation equipment on fire. And that was, he says, is part of a vendetta he had against the company. Jurors on Tuesday, they found this person, Viorel Presup. He's a 66-year-old out of Allen Park in metropolitan Detroit. He was found guilty on 6 counts of arson of vehicle or property in interstate commerce. Investigators said Priyap, who was charged in that U.S. District Court, he was charged in California December 2022. He set fire to at least 24 semi-trailers belonging to Swift in 8 states, and he was convicted in 2018 for cargo being stolen. Back during that point in time, Swift noticed a lot of their trailers, so there was a lot of cargo theft going on, so they started putting trackers in there. Well, the police did a sting, and when they found the trailer, they found this guy, and that's where they learned that he was doing all of these trailer fires. He's going to be sentenced on June 7th. You can read that full article over on freightwaves.com, but good thing we got this menace out of the way. We've been talking a lot about cargo theft. Kourtney Kardashian, she had her Lemmy gummies stolen. She said millions of those were stolen from her. We had Walker Family Home Goods. They had an entire trailer stolen from them. Countless people have reached out on me on LinkedIn since I've started talking about this stuff, saying, hey, I'm a broker. We had 12 of our trailers stolen so far this year. Well, now the Pittsburgh Penguins, check out this tweet from them. Their trailer with Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads have been stolen. The Pittsburgh Penguins announced yesterday that a shipment carrying the Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads for that night's games against the San Jose Sharks had been stolen after its arrival in guess where? California. As a result, the bobbleheads are not in Pittsburgh and they were not distributed to fans last night at the game. It says here the Penguins learned that they were victims of cargo theft after failing to receive the shipment as scheduled. The team worked with the manufacturing transportation companies to alert the appropriate state and federal authorities who are currently working to locate the cargo. And there's that bobblehead right there, that beautiful Jaromir Jagr bobblehead. I even talked about a supply chain crisis bobblehead since the Nationals had their Ryan Braun one. Remember that? It couldn't get here because it was still stuck on all the ships. I ordered that one. I had it for a little while. It fell off my desk and he broke his leg. But here's what Pittsburgh Penguins president of business operation Kevin Acklin says. He says, we are shocked to be a victim of cargo theft. We're working closely with local and federal authorities on the investigation. Well, this is unfortunate. Incident adds to the, well, this unfortunate incident adds to the legend of Jaromir Jagr, who will be in attendance as our guest at tonight's game. We look forward to resolving this theft and delivering the prized Jaromir bobbleheads to their rightful homes with our fans. So last time if you went, they had no bobbleheads to give you. You had to scan a QR code. You're going to get a rain check. They're going to try and get another order of these for all of you. And DraftKings, though, they already have a suspect in mind. They say it's Gritty, the Flyers mascot. They're pinning this one all on Gritty. Now, that is DraftKings saying that. I don't know who stole this one. Imagine if Gritty was doing all of the theft. Imagine if he got Kourtney Kardashian, too. That would be a shock. CDL fraud. I put a poll out to all of you last week, and I said, man, why are all these stories popping up about CDL fraud happening? Well, guess what? Here's another one for you. This one happens over in Colorado. It says here, 9 News reports, the state is retesting 183 truck drivers after a driving school shut down for hundreds of violations. The state of Colorado has shut down a truck driver testing facility. 183 people got their CDLs from Randy Lopez CDL in testing in the past 6 months before it was closed in December. There is enough doubt that some of those people shouldn't be on the road and they should never have gotten their CDLs in the first place. Randy Lopez says it was a clerical issue, but a lot of the documents they're looking at see people passed for reasons they shouldn't have been passed before. Now, I say, why is this popping up so often? Well, just 2 weeks ago, CDL Life reported that cross-country truck driving training school in Burlington, North Carolina, shut down in February of 2024 after a handful of fraudulent testing was discovered. The school suddenly shut down. It didn't notify its employees. Nobody got money. A bunch of people got fake CDLs. And early this year, there was a story about the five Massachusetts state police officers who were also using code words to give out fake CDLs. Very concerning. What's going on in here? Know about any more fake CDLs out there? Let us know. And real quick, on FreightWaves.com, there's one more carrier shutdown. Just some bad news here. An Illinois trucking company with 183 trucks and 171 drivers recently filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Clarissa Haas has a great story on FreightWaves.com. But this was Nationwide Cargo, Inc. of East Dundee, Illinois. They have shut down. So sorry for them. Sorry for all their drivers. All these stories, go to FreightWaves.com. Check out the rest. But on today's episode, this is number 694 of What the Truck. Are you feeling sleepy, driver? We got hours of service regulation. We got ELDs, but are they helping? Are they making drivers safer? Well, JJ Keller's Mark Shedler's here, and we're going to talk a little bit about that very topic. What skill sets will the next generation of freight brokers need? Ty Software CEO Walter Mitchell here. He's going to tell us what future freight slingers need. We got industry consultant Aaron Hatfield. He's back from Modex. He's chopped his finger off with a saw before. He's going to talk a little about carrier mix and when to make the jump from an LSP over to your own consulting firm. Is now the time? Is 2024 your year? Maybe. And Airbus, distinctive new airline, carries whale-sized cargo. Eric Kulish is here to talk about that. We're also going to talk about Boeing accidents. Seems like a ton are reported. But is it like East Palestine with the train derailment? And we kept hearing about train accidents. Is it a result of people just sharing more of these? Or is Boeing in real trouble? And are we as flyers in real trouble? We'll find out all of that. But Mark Shedler's here right now, Senior Transportation Management Editor, JJ Keller. What's up, sir? Your room looks very like warm and inviting today.
Yeah, it is very inviting. And I am very glad to be here. I'm being sandwiched in between Pi Day and St. Paddy's Day. And last year I was one of your St. Paddy's Day's guests. So it's really good to be here, but to talk about a serious topic.
Oh, yeah, that's Sunday already, is it not? We got Sunday coming up. No St. Paddy's show this year. We're going to have an 18th one because that's what Monday is. Well, hey, that's Mark, I'm excited to catch up with you. You know, we've talked about this 20 years ago. We started talking about hours of service regulations. 5 years ago, we put in ELDs. So we've had some time to look at data. We've had some time to look at all of this. Yet fatigue driving still happens to be an issue. Talk to me a little bit about this.
Well, I'm certainly not, with my 25 years of operations experience, I don't equate a log legal driver with a safe driver. You know, it's a statistic that jumps out at you every time you look at roadside inspection violations. Falsification at number two. You don't see fatigue driving in the top 50, but falsification is persistently in the top two or three. Sometimes it's number one. And there's many ways with an ELD that a driver can be driving over hours. But what I found in working in operations was every driver's different. They can't just work the logbook the way the hours of service play out. And in 03, 04, the 14-hour rule came into be, and I think it helped somewhat. I think ELDs help, but there are many ways around that. And when you look at personally working with drivers, a lot of them can't drive late at night anymore. They don't want to drive into the early morning hours, so you have to listen to them. You have to know your drivers. One statistic that I think is understated, the large truck crash causation study that was done a while ago found that 13% of CMV crashes are due to fatigue driving, but only 5% of the drivers were put out of service for non-driving violations. So there's a disconnect. That study was approved to be redone. I'm very much looking forward to it. But with the years that dash cams have been out there now, there's starting to be more data that just isn't, hey, what's getting caught at the roadside? There are dash cam, artificial intelligence dash cams that pick up on behavior that is indicative of drivers nodding off or lane departure, a lot of hard braking. Those are the indicators that you have to use. You can't be reacting to roadside violations anymore. And ATRI has studies out that have correlated, certainly that failing to traffic violation convictions, correlation with DOT accidents. And one example is failure to yield. They have 141% greater chance of a DOT crash if they're convicted. But how many times do drivers do those things, whether they're fatigued or distracted, and you're not before they get caught by enforcement? So you can't just keep doing what you're doing and expect your safety program to improve. And when you think about the reality of it, if you're not in that truck with them, you really don't know when you're telling a driver and you're talking to them, can you do this load? Yes. If you're a truckload carrier, LTL might be a little different or in package. But even if they do the same job every day, I have a story that I could tell where log legal doesn't mean they're safe.
No, yeah. Well, I mean, look, there was the Truck Safety Coalition, they put out a stat last year. I remember talking about to Rachel Premack on the show about it. And it was since 2009, truck crash deaths have increased by 71%. Have you experienced this, their driver being legal with hours of service, with the ELD experiencing crashes?
Yeah, I have. I mean, I've been in truckload for 25 years. I've dealt with a lot of post-crash issues, but I'll tell you two quick stories that stand out. They're indelible for me as a leader. I only lost one driver in my career to a fatality. It was a rollover crash, 2 p.m., sunny, dry day, Highway 97, Central Oregon, on a curve. Well, 2 p.m. is generally the midpoint of the circadian low for many people, which that equate that that's the circadian cycle. It's 12 hours after the midpoint of your sleep cycle when you get drowsy. Every person has that circadian rhythm. Well, I had a driver that unbeknownst to us drove back from Disneyland. This is California, and drove his family back late the night before. Didn't want to call off sick, and he started to call in from his remote location. He was in Modesto. We were in Lathrop, French Camp, California. So he didn't see the driver, didn't ask him a lot of questions. We just knew he'd been off for a week. He's fine. He's got lots of hours. And we gave him a not very strenuous dispatch. However, he could have easily said, I can't do this load, and I got to get rest. But he didn't. And, you know, frankly, we didn't have a great, return to work or call check-in process. So he laid it over 2 o'clock in the afternoon because he was tired. This is in 03. If we had dash cams in the truck and had more telematic data that was indicative that day, we would have gotten alerts way before 2 in the afternoon, because he left Sacramento. So he was probably closer to the end of his driving day. But I had to attend his two kids' funeral, or his two, had to attend his funeral and listen to his two kids recite poems about their father. And, you know, it never left me. His widow certainly appreciated my attendance, but there's nothing I could do to help or make it better. So if you're not, you know, if you're a carrier and you're not probing or just taking your driver's I'm okay to drive at face value, you're gonna miss something. So you need a better safety program. Second one, driver did the same job every day. The other driver was an over-the-road driver, except his job was from midnight to 8 a.m. He ran dedicated Sunday night through Thursday night or Friday night into Saturday morning, and he was sick. We didn't know that, but he drove off not once, but twice during the evening. The reason I know that is because he lived to tell about it. And the first time he took a nap, put his hand on the steering wheel, he got back on the road. It wasn't bad. Took a 20-minute break or so, and then drove off the road later. The kicker is his wife was with him that night to keep him awake. And work ethic, you can't take that away from a driver, but your culture has to be capable of where a driver feels capable of saying, I'm not ready to go. And, you know, you need to find a substitute. And we had substitute drivers in that operation. They just, this driver just thought he could do it. The fact is, midnight to 8 a.m. is the worst time for anybody to be awake, much less driving a semi.
A lot of drivers like to run then, because, you know, there's less traffic on the road. A lot of them swear by it. Very sorry to hear about your loss too and that funeral. Do you have a tip for carriers? It can be a little bit difficult for them. Let's just look from their perspective, because, you know, they go, hey, the driver's following hours of service, the driver's being compliant right there. But how do we address fatigue beyond just that?
Well, I'll go straight to, you know, what we offer is at jjkeller.com. We have an AI, artificial intelligence dash cams. It can detect driver facing. It can detect drivers nodding off, lane departure and things like that. And it allows you to coach the driver as these things occur and instill in them that they need to be taking proper breaks. We've got auxiliary cameras as well at jjkeller.com that can help. We have a safety consulting team that can install a distracted / fatigue driving prevention program as well. It comes down to training, really, in the long and the short of it. And I was part of a webcast in January with Rodolfo Giacomin of CVSA. He's part of the North American Fatigue Management Program at NAFMP.org. There is a completely free download of PowerPoints for training the entire organization to install a fatigue management program as well. It even involves, there's even a module for the family involving the spouses or significant others. So it's culture. It's culture and your safety management controls, which include dash cam, video driven coaching. I mean, those are the things that I have seen change safety programs most profoundly in a very short amount of time. Automated emergency braking, lane departure on the trucks, that's fantastic. But the driver is the best vehicle safety system you can get, but they can't do it without support or without training.
Amen. Thank you, Mark. Thank you so much. Have an awesome weekend and great words to end on right there. Go check out JJ Keller. Mark, take care.
All right. See you later.
Take it easy. All right, everybody. Meanwhile, speaking of driver safety, it's over in Nashville, Tennessee. Right here, Rob Carpenter, who posted this, says, no wonder all these conferences and risk workshops are in Nashville. Hitting a little close to home there, Robbie. He said, just because it's there, regardless of the reason, you don't get to hit it or just drag it when it's in front of you. This car right here, Saya, What are you SIA safety directors doing? Michael Fitzgerald says, truck driver to mechanic, I think it's fuel starvation. This thing is really sluggish, like I'm pulling an anchor. Kevin Gent says, I was waiting for the rest of the story when the vehicle stopped and drivers got out to discuss their problem. And William Patton said, this is our Monday morning commute. Sadly, this is not even a rare occurrence. Maybe not. But right now, we got Walter Mitchell, CEO, over at Thai Software. And he looks like he's sitting out at a wonderful little dock. Where are you, Walter? Mitch?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me. Or good afternoon, I guess. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, this is just my background. So, you know, we try to get a lighten the mood a little bit, and which I think we need because coming off a pretty intense topic there with the driver fatigue.
Yeah. Intense topic, then an intense meanwhile video. And now we're going to talk not today about the truck drivers, but we're going to talk about the other guys in the equation, the freight brokers, the other guys and girls, the freight brokers. But before we get there, real quick, elevator on Ty before we jump into anything so people know who you are.
Yeah, so Thai Software is a transportation management system for freight brokers. We focus mostly on LTL full truckload in North America. And the goal is to really help freight brokers be as efficient as they can and do their job as well as they can and have the tools and technology to support them and back them up while they're going through that process.
You know, when I haven't been a freight broker, but I've been a customs broker and I've sold freight before and I've had to deal with all the documents and all the inefficiencies. We talk so much about tech and everything, optimizing and making freight more efficient. How do we make the freight broker more efficient?
Yeah. So, you know, there's really a lot of different ways that we can go about it. And one of the goals is we want to take and use technology as a support system for the work that we're trying to do. And I think that's one of the key components that we can really focus on is making sure that our technology is supporting the work that we need to do. Similar to what you were just talking about with having the AI tools and having the guides and to help the drivers with their safety and having these programs in place. In a similar vein to that, we can do the same thing with the freight brokerage and think about our ops people, think about our accounting people, and the jobs that they're doing to process freight and to manage the workflow. Similar to, again, what you were talking about on the customs side, where you have all these documents to manage, let's make sure that the technology tools are focused around optimizing that flow and that it makes their job easier by leveraging technology.
What are some of those what are the attack vectors? What time-wasting processes and functions or freight brokers doing tasks that we could automate, that we can make easier?
Yeah, so, you know, we've kind of looked at 8 different places that will make a difference for freight brokers. So, for example, and this applies to other parts of the logistics cycle too, but specifically in the freight broker world, number one, receiving orders from clients. You know, how do orders come into your environment? Like, what is happening? Are they emailing them to you? Are they coming through EDI? What are the places and the ways that you're bringing orders in from customers? Number two, pricing shipments. How are you pricing the shipment? How are you determining what the rate needs to be? Is it all spot quote? Are there contracts? Is this LTL freight? Are you using common carriers? Is this like a milk run? You know, what are the pricing strategies that you have? Number three, searching for load coverage. So if you are in the spot market, is it a post and pray strategy? Do you leverage existing customer relationships and carrier relationships to find coverage? You know, what are your strategies around that? Number four, track and trace. How much work are you putting into the process of tracking and tracing a shipment? How much work is going into making sure you know where the driver is at a given time? Number five, updating clients. You know, so updating the customer, making sure the shipper and the consignee knows what's going on for the shipment. Is an appointment scheduled? Is that appointment ready to go? Does the consignee know that when the driver is going to show up? Does the driver have the gate access code? Things like that. Number six, gathering paperwork, PODs, right? How do we get those PODs back? The carrier bill. How do we bring those in and process them? What does that process look like? And the carrier bill audit is number seven, like making sure that the carrier bill matches what we initially thought it was going to be. Is there detention rates that are new on there? Is there an accessorial charge that came up? And number eight, invoicing, getting that invoice out to the customer and making sure that we're processing that as quickly and effectively as possible so we can get that cash flow train moving.
Interesting. Now, Mitch, we like a lot of times when tech comes up now, people go, well, yeah, like tech's becoming table stakes. Everyone has to have some kind of tech component. That's what shippers are looking for. But let me ask you, what emerging technology is coming out that freight brokers need to be aware of?
Yeah. So, I mean, AI has been the big talk last year, right? And I think what it's really done for us is helped us move into a new generation of technology. And, you know, especially in the TMS space, one of the things that we really saw early on is as a business, we needed a TMS just to say that we're a freight broker. And the same thing, you have to check these boxes like, yeah, I have technology, I'm good to go. But now as we move into the next generation, it's not about checking the boxes. It's about focusing on the user. And that's the next phase of technology and the development of technology in our businesses. And so that's where those 8 points were coming from is, are we looking at the technology that we've implemented based on the users that are using it? Or are we looking at our technology based on maybe the cost of the technology or just the fact that we have it? And it's more important as we evolve, like let's not get caught up on AI or any other trendy type topics. Let's focus on operational excellence. Let's focus on making sure that our team is able to leverage the technology in a way that really adds value to both their day and to the business.
Mitch, are there any pitfalls to be, I mean, I know that there are, but I'm curious what you think they are, the pitfalls of bringing a data-driven strategy to a freight brokerage, especially without like proper training?
That's really the key right there, Tim, is it's the proper training. And let's make sure that we don't just implement technology for the sake of implementing it. What is our goal? Like, let's put together a process for why are we implementing technology and put together a multi-stage approach to, okay, we're going to bring in this new piece of technology because we're trying to accomplish some key objective. Like, for example, maybe it's a freight management platform or, and when we bring that in, the goal is probably to reuse our existing carriers a little bit more often. So how do we go about doing that? What's our metric for success when we bring this piece of technology in? You know, and we don't want to just do the purchase and pray. We want to be a little more strategic about it and be thoughtful. So, okay, I'm going to bring this in. My goal is over the course of 6 months to improve my carrier reuse by 20%. And then track that as you move along and make sure that your objectives and the processes you put in place to match the technology and the training you put in place to match the technology are both aligned with that goal or that KPI.
Very, very, very interesting. Now, let me ask you something here about the role that technology is going to play as we move into the future. There's a lot of sort of angst that, wait, are we just training this to replace us? You mentioned AI. There's some angst around that. The market hasn't been great. Some employees are cutting heads. What does the future of this tech look like? And should employees be worried?
So my opinion is they should be worried, but they should be worried about something different than what we're worried about. I've been in technology for more years than I should probably say, right? But this is what happens, right? We just keep getting older. And I guess it's a good thing. But one of the things that's always been a trend with technology and the discussion around technology is that technology is here to replace the people and to replace our jobs. And that's really just not the reality of it. As we've implemented technology through all sides of the world, it's generated more jobs than it's displaced. And the reason for that is because it's changing the jobs. It's changing what they do. And so one of the things that we like to say is that technology is not going to replace your job, but the person who can use technology well will replace your job. And so when you're thinking about like as an employee and as the environment's changing and which we know is going to happen, am I prepared for the technology that's coming in the next couple years? Am I embracing the technology that's here today so that I can stay competitive, so that I can stay at least in the front runner of the technology space and not become a laggard?
That makes a lot of sense. Now, with all this talk of tech, continuous training and continuous improvement is probably as important forever. But one of the problems is in some of these companies, like, for example, when I went into FedEx Trade Networks, right, that was great. They gave me a ton of training and everything. And I thought, like, every company was like this. So 5 years later, I leave and I go to another company and I get there and they just hand me, like, a laptop and a cell. And I had no idea about the company culture or anything. And then I was like, well, maybe FedEx is good, this company's bad. But no, FedEx was more of an outlier. And every company I moved through since then that was on the freight side, they lacked in training severely. What's your tip to have a better training program, better continuous training?
Yeah, I think it's got to be cultural. It's got to be a culture built into the business. And this isn't just around technology. This has been an ideal around, you know, improve ourselves, be the best version of ourselves, a learning organization. Like, these are ideals that have been around for forever. And I think as a business and as a business owner, we have to embrace that. And we have, even at Thai, you know, one of our core values is level up, right? You have to embrace that continued learning and build it into the culture of the organization. You have to encourage your team to ask questions like, hey, you know, this is kind of a tough process. Is there something we can do that's better? Is there a technology that can help us solve this problem and make my life a little easier here? Is there some reason that we go through this process? Can it be changed? And encourage that constant feedback cycle and encourage that learning cycle and encourage that level up and build a learning organization and build an organization that adapts. Because what we do know for sure is that over time, the leaders in spaces change, but the leaders adapt. And the more we can adapt and the more we can build our organization around that adaptation, the stronger it's going to be.
Mitch, great words, great words. Have a fantastic weekend. Everyone go check out Thai Software, check out their TMS, and go connect with Walter Mitchell on social media. He's a great guy.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim. It's been great being on the show.
Thanks for stopping by. Have a great St. Patrick's Day. Awesome weekend. All right. Let's see here. What do we got next? Elsewhere.
Oh, fell a little messed up here. Thought he was going to be quick flying around trucks. Well, did he know he got in the old Blue Beacon truck wash line? Come on.
What's your 20 says?
He ain't going nowhere.
I take my rig and my GMC 2500 to the Blue Beacon. I'm the guilty one. And Goldflower says, Altoona. I remember being over there, stuck there. All right. Aaron Hatfield, founder at Hatfield Consulting. What's up, sir?
How you doing, Timothy? Good to see you, sir. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, excited to be here.
You got any leads on who stole the Yaromir Yager bobbleheads?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Do you have any leads on who may have stolen the Yaromir Yager bobbleheads from the Pittsburgh Penguins yesterday?
You know, I'm working on it behind the scenes with my crew. So, you know, we're working with local authorities, you know, to be able to solve that situation for them.
Well, Aaron, people haven't met you before. You're not a Yager bobblehead. Who are you? What's the elevator pitch on Aaron Hatfield?
Yeah, no, thank you. Well, my name is Aaron Hatfield, principal consultant and founder at Hatfield Consulting. Started it up here at the end of last year. My main goal is to partner with small to medium-sized businesses that are in that go-to-market phase or in a growth phase or a scaling phase to be able to complement them from a strategic initiative side of things when it comes to kind of a fractional CSO standpoint, building that out those internal sales processes. And just being able to help them not only fine-tune their customer acquisition process, but then also focus on the back end and help build that repeatable, sustainable systems and frameworks to help them follow that growth. And that's where I'm focused.
Very interesting. But I have something really important to ask you. Now, you cut your finger off with the table saw, and I'm curious.
I did.
Let's see it. Well, first, let's see the finger. Let's see the damage.
Well, it's healed up. I just, it's up under the nail here. So it's good now. But what I ended up doing, it just took about half the nail off. So I was able to squeeze it back on, put some super glue on it. And I was telling Jonathan Dunaway over at Veritas Logistics, I can still give high fives instead of 4.5. So I'm all good.
Wow. So like I'm the nurse right now and I'm pointing at the pain chart from like 1 to 10, where you got the screamy face. Which, what are you putting this pain at when it happened?
It was surprising when it happened. I didn't even realize it until I started. I was laying floor and I didn't even realize it until I started seeing the blood spots on the floor. And then I said, oh, and I looked at the carpenter that I was working with that day and taped it up. And then later that night, I definitely knew it was there. That's when the throbbing started hitting.
built different. You are built different. Hey, how is Modex? And we have a video for Modex. Did you get flow this video? I gotta ask you a question about this. We got sound. That's
pretty cool. Can I have an orange Gatorade, please?
These are my friends at Geico, by the way. They were over there as well. And this robot, if you're an audio listener, so it's a robot here. It rolls up to you. You go up to it. It's a waiter, basically. You say, hey, I want the orange Gatorade. It turns around. It goes back to a bucket of different color Gatorades. There's three different colors, and it picked him the orange one. It brought it. I don't think it even wanted to tip, Aaron.
That's incredible. Yeah, Modex was fantastic. You know, I was there representing a client of mine, Arvest AI, and, you know, from the warehousing space and so forth. And it was, I mean, you know, 40,000 approximate attendees, 1,100 exhibitors. And it was absolutely just incredible to see the innovation that's coming, like we just saw. You know, I unfortunately missed that one. But I was in part of the center where we had some robot dogs going around and so forth. And so it's really fascinating to see the developments that are coming through, especially from a worldwide perspective. So a lot of folks that I was able to meet, talk to, learn more about their companies and these robotics that they're developing, on top of representing Arvest and sharing that information, they're coming from China, Japan, India, Mexico, Canada, Korea. So it's, as far as the shows go, I absolutely loved it, not only from an Arvest perspective, being able to really share the impact that we're making, but also just from a learning experience, you know, being able to see what other people are developing. And, you know, I shared with Brett Parsons, we connected it there. And I said, you know, back in the day, you know, innovation came from, you know, predominantly DOD, you know, in the, you know, Gates era when they were developing computers and so forth. And I'm bullish on the supply chain as a whole, as I think we're going to see a lot more innovation, impactful innovation happen in the supply chain versus other avenues. So being able to see that all collected under, well, I think 5 or 6 roofs was very, very fascinating and a very good time.
Anything in particular there? Like, I saw that robot. I thought that was quite interesting. Did you see anything there that really stood out to you that was like, this is viable? We're going to see this everywhere in 5 years.
Yes. Well, I might be a little biased, but what we're working on with Arvest, and that's something, if people want to check that out, go to their website. I think that is an impactful, simple solution that is getting down to the granular level. So I'm excited to see where that's going, but also from the automation side of robotics. For instance, Anywhere Robotics was a company I was able to talk with their chief engineer officer and just learn more. And they're using robots with lifts to unload containers and so forth that are floor loaded and everything. And just, it's cutting time down by so much. So they're actually in a startup phase as well. They're growing, but I think we're going to start seeing, especially from the loading docks, unloading docks, we're going to start seeing a lot more robotics and automation in that side of that business for sure.
Yeah. The only like criticism I've heard of a lot of like the warehouse loaders and the dock loaders is just in the past, they've been slow. They've just been too slow to justify the cost. But the stuff I'm seeing now is starting to look a lot more exciting. It's starting to look a lot faster. And again, it's starting to actually look like something you could sell someone and they would install in a warehouse. I think it's cool. Now you're going to Matt's next week. What do you hope to find out at Matt's? That's quite a different show than Modex.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's in Louisville. That's my backyard. I live in.
Is it really?
Pretty much just shy of halfway between Lexington and Cincinnati in Kentucky. So I know several folks that are going down there, want to meet them in person, but also from a carrier side of thing, a driver side, a fleet side of things, is I'm approaching it just as Hatfield Consulting, but definitely from a focus of learning. I genuinely am intrigued by what's being developed. And, you know, what is it? Something along the lines of 70% of products and goods in the United States are shipped on the back of a truck. So the way I'm approaching this show is just from an education and a learning standpoint, as well as, you know, I hope to find people, make good connections, potentially work with them in the future if that's something, you know, that's there. But if not, really my goal is to better understand the drivers, the carriers, the fleets, to be able to help make those bridges from my side of the business in the future.
Hey, I'll be at Matt's too. I'm super excited. Next Friday, a week from now, I'll be doing a live What the Truck at this time, noon to 1 o'clock. And then at 5 p.m. on the Sirius XM stage, we're also doing a live What the Truck on Sirius XM. So we'll have to bump into each other. You'll have to come by and say hi. Now, I got a question for you. You're a consultant now, but you used to be with Freight and a bunch of other different logistics companies. What made you jump to consulting and inspire people out there? Would you recommend such a move to the other person listening right now who's thinking, you know what? I want to get out from behind the desk and start my own thing.
You know, My short answer is yes, do it. I've been blessed with several learning experiences through over the course of the years. I got my start in cold storage warehousing about a decade ago, all the way, and I've been in multiple links of the supply chain, broker side, warehousing side, and then with freight and last mile delivery, and had a wonderful just education from each company that I was with, each stage of that development. And for me personally, it came down to, I come from a family of entrepreneurs. My father's an entrepreneur. My grandfather immigrated from Australia to Canada to the States and started businesses. And at this point is, you know, for me at least, I know where I've identified the areas that I'm good at, I'm dangerous at. But I also want to have a wider scope and be able to learn from multiple different types of people. And that's what I'm really enjoying in this position right now. And, you know, at the end of the day is I do enjoy the autonomy. And, you know, my old man, he's talked about this is, you know, bet on yourself, you know, and, you know, is I'm going to work hard. I'm going to, you know, listen, learn, and just continue to provide that impact to my clients. But yeah, it's wonderful just because it's me, you know, as I'm an individual that, I do my best to be intentional, to be fair, to be open-minded, and just to approach everything from a learning perspective. And actually, I appreciated Walter Mitchell and what he shared a little bit ago. I really appreciate that perspective. And I guess from an individual standpoint, from a small consulting agency standpoint, I share several of those same desires, perspectives, and just really want to help make my little space. You know, I'm never going to change the world, but maybe I can make my little space and those that I'm working with just a little bit better. And from a business side, wonderful, helping them grow, helping them find that ROI, helping them, you know, tackle that scale in sustainably and repeatable ways, but then also being able to just hear people's stories, learn about what makes them tick, and be able to just bridge those silos when necessary. That's one thing that I've noticed in our industry is I've been in several links. There are a lot of silos, whether it's carriers, whether it's fleets, whether it's warehousing, whether it's brokers. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for bridges to be built. And I made the joke one time is, you know, in the world, we have a lot of squares and we have a lot of circles. And I've just come to the standpoint, I think I'm a triangle. And, you know, it's I'm having fun. I'm enjoying the people that I'm meeting. And it's been very humbling, too, is I've been very blessed by the clients that I'm working with currently, partners. And then also just the LinkedIn network, you know, that's where where I play a lot. And just very thankful, very humbled, and very blessed to be able to experience the power of LinkedIn and just a strong learning network.
Very cool. Well, let me ask you, before I let you go, I'll give you a chance to consult us. What is your best carrier diversification tip?
My best carrier diversification tip, do it sooner rather than later. Do it if you think of it. I know that sounds super simple, but oftentimes what I'm running into is people are ripping off band-aids downstream. When in reality is when you're starting off, you know, look into people like ProShip, Jerry Dixon. She was somebody I ran into at Modex. Wonderful team, wonderful just approach to carrier diversification and that multi-carrier shippers. And you know, lean into resources that you already have. You don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. Maybe you just have to fine tune your existing practices. And, you know, this day and age with the economy the way it is, money's not cheap like it was back in 2020. And kind of that bell curve that we were riding up during the day, that's coming back down. So it's time to be more strategic. And I look at carrier diversification kind of like a mutual fund. You know, if I have 25 different funds a part of a mutual fund and three go down, you know, 22 more are still popping at making money, doing well. I look at the same thing with carriers. Is you're going to have that fluctuation. You're going to have disruption. As much as possible, plan on the disruption. And I think that's expect it rather than being surprised about it. And that's where carrier diversification comes in. There's a lot of, you know, great fleets to be able to utilize. But I would also, I'm a fan of the owner ops. I'm a fan of the little guys. And, you know, look into these smaller carriers, these smaller businesses, because they might not be able to take a ton of, you know, the capacity that you have, but they're going to be able to augment and grow with your team very well. And typically, you can work with them quicker and maybe a little bit easier than some of these larger corporations.
Very nice. All right, Aaron, it's time for me to spin the wheel of stupid questions. It's your first time on the show, so Let's see where this bad boy lands. I guess I got to be over here to see where that is. Okay. Oh, here we go. What historical event would you have liked to see in person?
Oh, that's actually a really good one. And, you know, honestly, there's that phrase when Caesar came back across the Rubicon and he was coming back to implement the Caesars. And that's where the phrase comes, crossing the Rubicon, point of no return. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall just back. I mean, it's the Romans, right? You know, it's like that trend was going around. Just how often do you think about the Roman Empire? And it's like, well, I think about that more often than I'd like. So being there, seeing kind of that foundation of Rome and what that looked like, because they just set the rest of Europe and the world history up for just, you know, that where we're at now. And I'd love to, again, just be a fly, see how that panned out. And
Aaron, how do people reach you? How do they find you?
Well, you can reach me on LinkedIn, Hatfield Consulting. We have a company page. You can reach out to me via email, aaron@ajhatfieldconsult.com. My phone number is on the LinkedIn page as well. And feel free to DM me, send me an email. And then through that, we can set up a phone call.
Have a great weekend. Have a great St. Patrick's Day. Take care, sir.
Take care, Tim.
Go cross that Rubicon. That Rubicon freight. All right, rate the strap work. Okay, come on up here. Nice one to you, all. Was there even any straps? Were there even any wheels? Attack.gaming says he paid extra for the insurance. Good to go. The Exploding Possum says, I'd like to say this is a new one for me. 23 years up and down the road. Never seen this. Trevor says, you can't make this nonsense up. No Joe 64 Houston, we have a problem. And Tom Butler said it must be his ex driving. I don't know. I don't want your ex driving. That's true. All right, let's go to Eric Coolish and find out about a really, really cool Beluga plane. Air cargo editor at Freightways. What's up, man?
Hey, Tim. Thanks for having me on the show. How you doing?
Every time I see you on here, and we used to do Freightways Now, I always see that typewriter, and it always makes me almost go on Lego.com and order the Lego typewriter version of that. Like, I don't know. Maybe Lego can give you a kickback.
I see you got one of those big Flexport planes there. I should have put mine. It's in the other room. I should have put it back here, but I got the small guy.
Hey, well, you tell me something here. So I got this Flexport. How many packages do you think I could fit in something like this, were this to be like real size?
Packages?
I don't know. Packages, freight, cargo?
Yeah. I don't know. Tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands, but not nearly as much as the plane that we're talking about today, is it? Let's look at this right here. Is this a regular Beluga or is this the XL Beluga?
So that is a specially made Beluga. That's the legacy version. So Airbus now has an XL, an extra large one that's bigger than that one that they're using themselves. So this is a little bit smaller.
Now, that's like the Megamind plane. It's got the big old head on it. What is this? What does this allow it to hold? This isn't a passenger plane, right? This is a pure cargo plane?
Yeah, it's a pure cargo plane and then some. It's like a cargo plane on steroids. Yes. It's, you know, Airbus is one of the big global aircraft manufacturers, and they, you know, have plants and assembly lines, manufacturers all over Europe and even in the U.S. now. And so they needed to find a way to move stuff around, especially these large components, let's say a wing or a fuselage. And so they can't fit that in a regular plane. So they took an Airbus A300 and modified it and built this kind of curved or bulbous fuselage around it. And it's got the widest circumference of any cargo aircraft in the world. So it's wider and 50% taller. So you can get a lot of big stuff in there.
They just put it wasn't part of the Falcon 9 rocket that launched yesterday. Wasn't part of that carried in one of these?
I don't know if that was the same one. That might be a little later. SpaceX is taking a Falcon 9 up with a European satellite. So the interesting thing is Airbus, the smaller version of this plane, they decided to commercialize that business. And so they're using the big ones, but these other ones they're not using anymore. They said, you know what? Let's farm these out and create a business for shippers that have really unusual, big and bulky freight. We can offer this plane. So they've started up this new airline and they just got permission to fly into the U.S. So they delivered a satellite to Florida to go up on a Falcon 9 later this month.
Have they ever literally shipped a whale in one of the Belugas? I know they've, and I know it sounds funny, but they've shipped whales before, right? Like the museum, the Atlanta, the Georgia Aquarium famously had one of their whales shipped.
Yeah, I mean, cargo jets like 747 or some of these other big freighters, you know, dolphins, killer whales, you know, to go to different for, you know, wildlife rescues or to go to an aquarium or something are carried. So it takes a bunch of specialized logistics for that. I don't know if Airbus Beluga's carried one yet, but that would be pretty interesting.
You can't just bring these anywhere, can you? We have a picture of it being loaded. And if you look at how they loaded it, they have like almost, do we have that photo? It's almost like a track that brings the, yeah, that one right there. It's almost like a track that brings the cargo into the Airbus.
So this is very interesting. And, you know, it could be a plus, but also a little bit of a complexity to the logistics with this plane. So, you know, most cargo planes have big wide cargo doors on the side belly and they load them. Or up on top for the main deck. The 747, some versions have a nose loader where the nose flips open and you got a ramp and can drive on. The Antonov AN-124, a Ukrainian-built or a Russian-built plane, has got ramps on the front and the back so you can load on. This plane was developed differently. The cockpit, you basically load right above the cockpit and you can't drive in. So they have to have this special loader. It's basically some kind of scaffolding system with kind of a rail motorized or hydraulic rail system so it can pull. So you got to lift it up with a crane, put it on this loader that kind of slides it in or out of the, you know, the compartment. So it takes a while to set that up, the scaffolding, and then to, you know, just the loading and unloading process takes a few hours.
How many are these planes? Are there? There's only a few, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Airbus is operating a few of its own. These, for the outsized or out, you know, commercial airline, they have four of them in service right now.
Interesting. Yeah. You have a great article, by the way. If you want to learn more about this plane, go to freightwaves.com. Eric has a whole article. I also found that even the crew on this, not just the loading, but like the crew takes extensive training as well. And I'm not talking about just the pilots. I'm talking about that loading crew and the crew that has to maintain it. So there's a lot of logistics in just flying one of these Belugas around, much more different than this Flexport I got right in front of me.
Yeah, a couple of interesting points is that, you know, this plane, even as big as it is, we're talking about, it can't carry like big and heavy stuff. It's not designed for that. It's a little smaller. So you can take kind of lighter, big and bulky, but you can't take a bunch of big trucks or a tank like a 747-8. And so, you know, and then it's so the fuel range isn't as long. So to get to the U.S., it's got to make a multiple hops along the way to refuel and stop versus, you know, some of these other big freighters can just go straight.
Interesting. Now, everyone check out that article. You have another one on there. It was a little bit concerning. It's about FedEx pilots and their contract. What's going on here?
Well, this has been an ongoing topic for, you know, since last year, but the FedEx pilots are getting restless about their contract situation. They had a tentative agreement last summer, and in a surprise move, the pilots, when the agreement was brought to them, they voted it down. They rejected it. And so they went back to the table in November and have been negotiating, but not making much progress in the pilots' eyes. You know, FedEx is in a tough situation right now, or you know, it's not an ideal time to be getting a new pilot contract like it was maybe 18 months ago, because the freight economy is down, FedEx volumes are down, and FedEx has admitted they have a surplus of pilots, to several hundred. And so, you know, flying hours are down, guys are making less money. And so, but the frustration's kind of boiled over, and there was a lot of dissatisfaction internally that we've learned about within the FedEx pilot union with the leadership. And over time, a lot of the leaders have been kind of voted out or recalled, and there's kind of a new guard or a bunch of young Turks that are, you know, want to take a more aggressive stance against FedEx, and have kind of pushed things to get out of mediation, which could potentially lead to a strike attempt down the road, but we're a long way from that.
Oh, good. That was going to be my next question, because they saw UPS last year with what they do with their negotiations, but they also have to look at Yellow, what they do with their negotiations, because that did not work out for that particular company. But it's good that you say that the strike is still a long way off, because
just real quick, the reason for that is airlines, unlike the, you know, truckers or other unions that have less, more leeway. They're governed by these specialized government rules. It's an airline industry. And so you got to go through all these bureaucratic steps and regulations. And so you can't just get pissed off and strike it. There's a laundry list of things you got to go through to be allowed to get to that point.
Well, Eric, I got a couple more things to run through with you here in good news, bad news. So hit the bumper and I'll tee him up for you.
Okay. Do it.
Has the bad news and good news.
There we go. All right, Eric Kulish, last year, just about a year ago, in East Palestine, Ohio, there was a big train derailment. What happened on social media and in the general mainstream media is suddenly a ton of derailments were getting shared and reported on, creating this effect that it made it seem like a ton more derailments were happening, and you know, people start coming up with conspiracy theories. Well, this week alone, there's been like, what, 5 Boeing incidents, there's been fuselage issues, there's been a whistleblower killed. Are more incidents happening to airlines now than they were before? Is something really going wrong with Boeing here?
Just a quick point. Whistleblower died. We don't think he was killed, but we don't know.
No, not necessarily by Boeing. I'm just saying it was just another weird thing in a week that was Boeing.
Yeah, no, you know, I think people lump things together. Some things are Boeing related, some things aren't. You know, I feel badly for Alaska Airlines. You know, they had a pilot, they had some guy in the jump seat last few months ago, had mental issues, and it was in the cockpit and tried to pull the fuel line and take down the plane, and they had to emergency land. Then they had the door plug that, you know, exploded out of the side of the plane in January. And just the other day, they had someone in the passenger of the cockpit trying to open the cockpit door and got arrested. He was kept going up. So, you know, those aren't really Alaska's fault. You know, the Boeing plane was a Boeing issue with the door plug and a random person. So a lot of these things get pinned on companies, you know, overdone. Boeing's had their share of issues, but some of these things are, you know, pilot or aircraft related or maintenance separate from Boeing. So you just got to be careful.
Okay, so nothing to be too alarmed yet. It's just people are hyper aware of the reporting, kind of like that train thing.
I mean, you know, Boeing's got, they've got a long track record here of some problems, quality control issues, especially with the 737 MAX dash 9 and some of their others, the 787. So, I mean, it's not like they've been doing everything perfectly. There have been a lot of problems, but some of these things in the news, you know, are just because they happen to be a Boeing plane doesn't necessarily mean it's, you know, traced back to Boeing.
Okay, good. Because a lot of people have been asking about that. And I was curious myself. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of flights every day. I know it sounds like a lot of incidents, but it could be like that train thing where there's a lot of trains and this just happens. Okay, now I got to get your opinion on something. This caused a lot of debate online. This is about merging. All right, let's take a look at what we got here. We got the hood truck right here. This guy squeezed in a little late, right? Four-wheeler comes in a little late. They're going onto the on-ramp to get to the other side of this freeway, and the trucker is not having it, right? He's just beeping, and he will not relent. He's still going. Okay, the four-wheeler finally relents, and it's funny, his phone rings right at the end. I don't know if they had, like, a motive camera or something, and the safety director was like, what the hell are you doing? What do you got, Corey? Hey, who's in the wrong here?
Yeah, I'm all for, you know, finding that whole, you know, merging. You know, I think people like merge or get in line for exit ramps, and then you have these big gaps. And so, you know, if you can get in there without causing any problem when there's an opening, all for it. But that was I'm with the trucker on this one. That was a bad move. You can't cut in like that at the last minute and nearly cause an accident. So, you know, trucker, honk away.
I'm sorry, you're wrong. I'll have to give you a negative cowbell for that. They're both idiots. The guy was an idiot for pulling in there. The trucker was an idiot after about 4 seconds of holding that horn down. Like, we got it at that point. There's no reason to lose your CDL. You're filming this on your own camera, you fool.
I defer to you. Good point.
I mean, why would he? All right, now, are you interested in the Cybertruck at all?
A little bit, sure.
All right, well, this might change your mind. This gentleman right here was recording a YouTube video.
If you get locked in the back of the Tesla Cybertruck, how in the world do you get out?
Now, watch the screen close. As we're watching this.
Oh, my God, it's completely dark in here.
Myself and the guys at GateCo, and you can drop that one. We were like, that will not stop. That would just hit him if he wasn't there. So the guys at GateCo have a Cybertruck, and they did an experiment for us. Take a look.
Oh, no.
Oh, is that a design flaw, Eric?
I mean, they can just borrow the technology from your garage door opener, right? Where it's supposed to stop if someone's in the way, right?
I know. I don't know why they don't have that there. That seems like an oversight, does it not?
Yeah, I mean, that's old technology by now.
A kid's going to get killed playing around in the back of that Cybertruck. Cybertruck owners, be mindful of that. That thing might just close around you. Well, Eric, we are out of time. Where can people find you online and find your articles?
Hey, freightwaves.com, at Eric Reports on Twitter, and I'm on LinkedIn.
Hey, thank you so much. Have an awesome weekend. Have an awesome St. Patrick's Day. And, well, we'll see you next week, sir. Take care. Hey, all of you, thank you for joining on this one. XM Drivers, On Demand podcast listeners, live streamers, all of you, thanks for joining us. You can find this show at FW What the Truck all across social media. You can find this on video on FreightWaves YouTube channel. Just look up What the Truck. Or you can find me on Twitter at Timothy Dooner. That's D-O-O-N-E-R. Aaron Goldbrot, take care. Don't be a stranger. Happy St. Patrick's Day.